1993, and maybe Sukhamdev would jump to that's the next verse. So, I think I owe you an explanation. Last night I had a fever, and it got a little bit worse in the middle of the night, and that's why I wasn't attending Mangal Arati and all the rest. So, I feel a little better. Just, we'll conduct the morning class a little differently. Or should I say, we'll do it the way we normally conduct class. We'll just go through the Sanskrit, verse and purport, and discuss it. So, we're reading text 45. And this text 45 is quoted, I would guess probably in the top 10 of Prabhupada's verses, quoting. Anyway, it's up there. And the verse is addressing the previous verse was addressing persons who are striving for liberation from the material entanglement but do not care for the well-being of others. They're interested in their personal benefit, not interested directly in the upliftment of everyone else equally. And Prahlad is saying that, as for me, I don't want to return back to the spiritual world without taking all these unfortunate, foolish rascals with me. That is to say, that they should also become free from that foolishness and rascal-like nature by your mercy. So it's a very, very powerful utterance on Prahlad's part. And immediately following that, he's now going to describe the chief binding feature that keeps the foolish. The kind of Maya Sukhaya civilization that they create. So unfortunately, I didn't look ahead. It would be nice if we could chant this together. But we didn't do that, so. The Sanskrit for the verse, Yan maitunari griha meri sukham hi tucham. Have you heard that verse before? If you listen to Prabhupada's lectures, you've heard it so many times. Kandayanena karayor iva dukkha dukkham tripyanti neha kripana bahu dukkha bhaja kandutivan manasijam vishaheta dhira. That last line is also kandutivan Nishijam Vishaheta Dira. So, translation. Sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Grihamedis, so-called grihastas who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is a source of distress. The kripanas, the fools who are just the opposite of brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensuous enjoyment. Those who are dhira, however, who are sober and who tolerate this itching, are not subjected to the sufferings of fools and rascals. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Materialists think that sexual indulgence is the greatest happiness in this material world, and therefore they make elaborate plans to satisfy their senses, especially the genitals. This is generally found everywhere, and specifically found in the Western world, where there are regular arrangements to satisfy sex in different ways. Actually, however, This has not made anyone happy. Even the hippies, who have given up the materialistic comforts of their fathers and grandfathers, cannot give up the sensational happiness of sex life. Such persons are described here as kripanas, or misers. The human form of life is the greatest asset, is a great asset, for in this life one can fulfill the goal of existence. Unfortunately, however, because of the lack of education and culture, people are victimized by the false happiness of sex life. Prahlad Maharaj therefore advises one not to be misled by this civilization of sense gratification, and especially not by sex life. Rather, one should be sober, avoid sense gratification, and be Krishna conscious. The lusty person who is compared to a foolish miser never gets happiness by sense gratification. The influence of material nature is very difficult to surpass, but as stated by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 7:14, mam eva ye prapadyante, mayam etam tarantite. If one voluntarily submits to the lotus feet of Krishna, he can be saved very easily. In reference to the low-grade happiness of sex life, Yamunacharya says in this connection, Yadhavati mama cheta Krishna padara vinde nava nava rasa dhamano yata ratum asit tadavati bhata nari sangame smaryamane bhavati mukha vikara shushtu nistivanam cha. Since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought, and my lips curl with distaste. Yamunacharya had formerly been a great king who enjoyed sexual happiness in various ways, but since he later engaged himself in the service of the Lord, he enjoyed spiritual bliss and hated to think of sex life. If sexual thoughts came to him, he would spit with disgust. Yanaitunadi grihamedi sukham hituchan. That line Prabhupada would refer to again and again. Grihamedi sukham. So the two are combined. Yan maitanadi grihamedi sukham. So grihamedi sukham means happiness out of that kind of family life which is not God conscious. So Prabhupada has used these two terms, grihastha and grihamedi, indicating the distinction between family life that is Krishna conscious and family life that is not Krishna conscious. So that happiness which is devoid, because the previous verse has this last line, so text 44, the last line of text 44, nanyam tvad asya sharanam brahmato anupashye. So if you can remember what that means, nanyam tvad asya sharanam, without taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, there is no happiness. Or the converse, happiness is found only where whatever activities we do, the those activities take us to the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. The activities that we do should be rendered in a mood of pleasing the Supreme Lord. And family life can be rendered that way also. And that's not so common. Far more common is the Grihamedi life, where happiness, which actually doesn't exist, is being sought in a life where the lotus feet of the Lord are not one's shelter. And so one tries to construct a little empire of happiness made out of a house of cards. Is that common here in India too? Yeah, okay. And a little slip and the whole house of cards falls. And then big distress. But even the so-called happiness when the house of cards was being built is not at all the kind of happiness that one finds at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. There is no happiness outside of that position. So Prabhupada gives in this word for word, Grihamedi Sukham, all types of material happiness based on attachment to family, society, friendship, etc. Like Narada, who Prahlad was the one who heard from, for Prahlad's spiritual master was Narada. Narada also spoke very strongly in this regard, in appropriate circumstances in any case, about not wasting one's valuable life in unnecessary pursuit of material enjoyment. There's a very prominent case for this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when the sons of Daksha, the Vahulashvas, and the, what's their other name? 1,000 sons of Daksha. No, that's different. The sons of, they're twice, the sons of Daksha were sent, much like the sons of Rukmini Bari. The sons of Daksha, 10,000 sons, they were sent to perform austerities for the purpose of assisting Daksha in producing progeny. Daksha was a prajapati, as you know. And he was requesting his sons, as Rukmini Bari requested, assist him. So they were on their way, merrily, to undergo austerities to perfect their lives so that they could then produce good praja. And Narada intercepted them. He spoke with them very strongly that they need not, to achieve perfection of life, become entangled in family life, and they should just devote themselves 100% to the service of the Personality of Godhead. So that made a lot of sense to them. They accepted Narada's instructions, and they didn't come back. And Daksha got frustrated, fried, as they say in the vernacular. And so he sent another batch of sons. Don't listen to Narada if he comes along. And sure enough, Narada came along, and even with that warning, what he said made sense, and so they didn't come back. They just went on to live a life in celibacy and became perfected souls. So there's a very famous confrontation in the Bhagavatam when Daksha confronts Narada and gives him his mind, just discloses his mind. What you've done is very much against the principles of Dharma. His argument is, his false argument, I should say, is that unless one experiences the suffering of material existence, one will not be able to conclusively, decisively, irrevocably choose a life of renunciation. And so one should go through that experience of family life and, I mean, not just to paint a totally bleak picture, but the suffering that is involved in family life. One has to know what that is before one can renounce it. That was his argument. Of course, it's not true, because there are many, many cases of persons who did not experience that suffering, or they did not go through the grahastha ashram and directly entered a renounced stage of life, and their lives became perfect. So it was, in any case, it was on that basis that Daksha then cursed Narada. You know about this? Daksha cursed Narada. I mean, Narada. Who can curse Narada? But the curse was, you shall not stay any place longer than some amount of time, short period of time, before you'll have to go. That's my curse. And Narada was thinking, this is great. Daksha, I don't know how to thank you. And significant also is that Narada consciously decided, I'm going to stay around for a while. And the explanation given was that Narada understood when someone experiences some radical reversal in life, like a very strong expectation that isn't met and they're demolished, or some calamity comes in that field which they're very attached to, family, friendship, society, etc. When something like that happens in someone's life, Narada considered, and it's true, and we should be very aware of this fact, persons are very open or susceptible to hearing that which is coming from another place besides feeding their attachments. When there's a death in a family or some calamity. Traditionally, that's when the priest is called upon to come and console the family and impart messages that elevate their consciousness beyond this temporary happiness. Isn't it? Just think about it. Wedding times, even the upscale things, to bring to bear the higher purpose of life. So, I'll just give an illustration of this. After visiting here, one of the places I went to was Bombay, and it was right after my visit, was right sometime shortly after the earthquake. And so the director of the hospital, I believe his name is Ganadhar, is that right? I think so. I met him. He was just on his way to Gujarat. It was his second visit. And they had a camp, like a hospital camp, set up to take care of whatever persons were remaining to be taken care of, but the conditions were so broken down that they really couldn't perform in hygienic conditions any medical treatment. So there was an arrangement that was being made. Those hospitals that could accommodate extra flood of people, funds were there to fly their survivors to various places where they would receive intensive care. So his plan was, I mean, he was very, you know, he looks like an administrator. He just has that appearance. So he was going in a very serious way to go check and see what can be done. And they had a very specific plan, 100 beds, that where they were going to put them and do the surgery necessary and all the care. And take care of the person's spiritual needs as well. Because in that kind of condition, one certainly needs one's spiritual needs taken care of. And from their experience at the Bhaktivedanta Hospital on Mira Road in Bombay, many people have described their experience at the hospital as a hospital of the heart. Because not only, they now have a fully paid division in their hospital. Actually, it was the former director who is now preferred to take up this, Madhavananda, who is preferred to take up this new position, where they just mentor to the spiritual needs of the people in the hospital. They don't, nothing medical, although they're qualified as doctors. They're just seeing to the spiritual needs. He has a whole staff, and he's the director of that department. And people, when people leave the place, a very, very strong response is that they feel that not only their bodies have been healed, but their hearts have been healed. And so they become naturally very, very grateful and very devoted to those who have helped them. And then the words, those who have helped someone who's been helped in that way, when the words are spoken that give transcendental knowledge, you know, that it goes deep into the heart. So they're realizing that they have a huge opportunity through that facility, as carers of people's medical needs, also taking care of people's spiritual needs. Very effective. So, back to Shubhalashvas and Bahulashvas. Shubhalashvas. So anyway, this is the sons of Daksha being told by Narada. So like Narada had that side where he would speak very, very strongly about the, if one can properly fulfill the duties of a renounced life, there's no need for this worldly life. Now, Prahlad is speaking the same thing. But please note the fact that Prahlad became a grihastha. He became a king. He had a wife. He had children. Their descendants, Bali Maharaj is one of those descendants. So although he understood all the things that he's saying, he had the depth of realization how those things can be engaged in Krishna's service. Although he had no attraction for them, absolutely no attraction for them, he understood how those things can be engaged in Krishna's service. And he did so. I'll bring up a little, if I may, it's a little off the track, but it's not so far off the track. There's one place here in India where, maybe more than one place, where there are students attending an institute, attending a university, where they're being told that this education that you're receiving is a waste of time. It's materialistic, has nothing to do with your spiritual well-being, you should trash it and just give yourself full time to devotional service, which seems to be like what Narada is saying to the sons of Daksha. And it may seem like what Prahlad is saying to us. He's addressing Lord Nrisimhadev, but we're also hearing it. That's not a, my little commentary, but that's not a mature understanding of what Narada was capable of doing. Narada, there's examples where Narada also, like for example with Magrari, he instructed Magrari, you stay here with your wife and live simply, instead of through this occupation of animal killing. You just live simply with your wife and devote yourself to the chanting of the holy name and worship of Tulsi. And Prahlad is another example. He became a grihastha. that Narada wasn't a one-track person. Prahlad wasn't a one-track person. Prabhupada wasn't a one-track person. We should not be a one-track person. It's not that, in other words, what's important is the principle, and behind the principle needs to be the particular application of the principle. The principle that's being spoken of is not indulging in sense gratification, but rather taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And the application of that principle may apply one way for those who require a certain degree of material comfort and a certain degree of material attachment. And the same principle applied for those who do not require that certain degree of material attachment and material comfort. It's like, if you can recall from, you probably have heard this here, from the section in the Bhagavatam where Lord Bhishma Dev, his parting instructions to Maharaj Yudhisthira. You've heard that section? You've lectured on that here? There's one very important verse in that section where, after pacifying Maharaj Yudhisthira, because he's, as you recall, he's lamenting over the battle that so many people have been killed at my expense, and what a horrible person I am, and no one can pacify him. Even Krishna cannot pacify Yudhisthira, but Bhishma Dev pacifies Yudhisthira in Krishna's presence, because Krishna wants to glorify Bhishma Dev. So Bhishma Dev pacifies Yudhisthira. And then Yudhisthira is basically, he's asking Bhishma Dev, you've given us counsel throughout our whole life. So now that I'm agreeing to accept the responsibility of being the emperor, and I promise you I'll stop lamenting over all this, can you give me instruction on the various ways in which the duties of Varna and Ashram can be implemented within society? Because it's the king's duty to see that the various Varnas, and note various ashrams, not everyone is suited for one ashram only. Not only the Grahastha ashram or only the renounced ashram. Because there are varieties of ashram, because there are varieties of requirements of people. Please instruct. Please give a Bhagavatam class before you depart. One last Bhagavatam class, please. In that response, he describes, Bhishma Dev describes, that I'll paraphrase this, but that in the student stage of life, which is the stage that you're all in, the same training applies for everybody. But the application of that training may be different according to the future situation. So the training is this training of sense control and respect for the person who's giving the knowledge. The basic formula of the teacher-student relationship. It's essential part of training, regardless of what one's future is going to be. If we're going to have a civilized and cultured society. Now, if we don't want to be civilized and don't want to be cultured, then you can throw all that out the window, and like Prabhupada is mentioning here, it can be just like the West, where there's completely disregard. I remember specifically that there's some students that were from IIT Bombay that I knew from visiting there. And one of them was doing his graduate study at Rice University. It's a very prominent university in Texas, and another one in Lexington, Kentucky, University of Kentucky. And I asked them after they reached there, what's it like? I said, they're shocked. I said, what do you mean? He said, the degree of disrespect that the students show for their teacher is just shocking. I said, it shouldn't be shocked. That's just part of the culture. The culture of no culture. They do what they want. They speak how they want. They behave how they want. And then the second thing was the flirtatiousness between male and female students in the classroom, or to speak of outside the classroom. I said, both of those things are shocking. He said, welcome to the culture of no culture. The culture of sense gratification, where there's no culture and no no respect. There's sense gratification. And go for it. I mean, there's certain rules, but those rules are easily broken if the sense gratification is important enough. So, for a civilized, cultured society, which Prabhupada is advocating in the purport, these principles of training, teacher-student relationship, is very important, along with parents to children. Also, teacher-student relationship. It's essential, proper dynamic in that relationship. But then the future, the teacher needs to see the qualification of the student. According to their psychophysical nature, encourage them. And that's the duty of the teacher. Encourage according to one's psychophysical nature. So it may be seen that someone's psychophysical nature is their varna should be in this direction. So they encourage this direction. Their ashram should be in that direction. So they encourage in that direction. And the principle of the two different ashrams, let's say family life and continuing on in celibate life, the language that's used in that verse is counteraction by detachment and interaction by attachment. That is to say, interaction by attachment means you take the situation of grihastha life, which is interaction, but maintain the condition of spiritual consciousness while in that grihastha ashram. Become purified by the principle of dedicating that activity, the family life activity, to the satisfaction of Krishna. And that way, you can come out on the other side. Purified. Because if that principle is not applied, you'll come out on the other side all beaten up. At least as far as spiritual consciousness is concerned. Unrecognizable. And it's a very, very critical consideration. Very critical stage of life, most likely, like the rest of the population of the world. Persons here will become grihasthas. And how you take up that situation, well, this verse is very, very appropriate. Whether you see that as interaction, and through that interaction, purification, or interaction and following the way of taking that shelter and leaving aside the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, and satisfaction of Krishna through those activities, satisfying Guru and Krishna through those activities, and taking up the position of finding satisfaction through the sense tantalization of those activities. Predominantly, or crowned at the top, the crest jewel on the crown is sex enjoyment. Number one attraction in material family life. So, this is the caution. So, just going back to this other example, I want to complete that. This other place somewhere in India where this teaching is give it all because it's a waste of time. That may be, in certain circumstances, like Narada did with the Shubhalashvas, those young men, sons of Daksha, were fit for that directive. And so it was appropriate for their situation of life, although Daksha wasn't greatly pleased by it. It was appropriate for their spiritual progress. Whereas others, it's appropriate for their spiritual progress to take up the position of grihastha life. And largely that's the case. So it's the principle that is dedication to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the principle. And happiness is to be found there. How is that happiness to be best manifested in an individual's life? There's where there's the individual application part. So we're not a cookie cutter religion. Everyone is the same. Or that's not our teaching. We recognize there's differences. And so what may be appropriate for one may be not appropriate for another, and vice versa. And we have to allow for that because we're individual. There's differences. But principles remain. So here, Prahlad is speaking about a principle. The principle is not becoming lost in the ocean of material existence by losing track of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And thus, yun maitanadi grihamedi sukham hitucham. Becoming attracted to material existence. Kundutivan manasijam vishaheta dhira. Rather, he's recommending that one become a dhira. Now, this word dhira is very important. It appears in the Sri Ashopanishad. Some of you have studied Sri Ashopanishad. What's the meaning of dhira? And explain this meaning a little bit. Somebody else want to embellish this a little bit more? What you said is correct. Yes.
Dhira is one who is not attached to family, wife and family.
So what are they attached to if they're not attached to those things? You have to be attached to something. And what's their attitude to those family members and relatives and so forth that they're not attached to? Two questions. Yeah. Let's go back to his question. I mean, his statement. Because it's what's described here, precisely. Well, I'll add something here. In Prabhupada's lectures on the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, so the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, what's that chapter? Dhyan Yoga, process of meditation. So the yogi also has to be dhira. And Prabhupada explains very nicely, very succinctly, that dhira means that one remains undisturbed, even when there's cause for disturbance. So one can say, this person is very nice. When there's no disturbance, they remain undisturbed. But the person who remains undisturbed, even when there's cause for disturbance, that's dhira. Someone says something insulting, as it's said in America, in your face. Just some nasty, insulting thing. And the person who hears it just remains undisturbed. Or there's some loss, the stock market crashes, or their business fails, or something happens that normally just wrenches people into little pieces. They remain undisturbed. Or when King Chitraketu was cursed by Parvati to take birth in hell for seemingly insulting Lord Shiva. You know the story, right? He remained undisturbed. He became Dhritarasura. No problem. As long as I can go on serving the Supreme Lord, I'll go in any condition or any place. As long as I can remember. Darshana, what sees everything with an equal disposition, that's Dhira. And so, back to family members and friends and all that business. Does that mean, so the person who's Dhira that's not attached to those persons, that means they can live or die, I don't care. They can be happy or suffering, I don't care. The calamity in Gujarat, I don't care. You know, the floods of the Ganges and millions of people die, I don't care. It's not, just like Prahlad, he has deep caring for the foolish rascals. He sees them for what they are. He's not attached to their foolishness. He's caring about their well-being, and he's going to the right place because of it. The attachment goes to the Supreme Eternal, which leads to detachment from the rest. Is this Saturday morning? Some students still have to go to class?
Unless they have special arrangements.
Okay. They have to go.
If they have special arrangements, no.
Okay. If anybody needs to go so you're not embarrassed and uncomfortable, if you need to go for class or something, you can go. Okay. Apituyarta darshanam. Seeing with equal vision, just like Vidyavanaya Sampane Brahmani Kavi Hastini Shuni Chai Vasapakisha Pandita Samadarshana. Seeing with equal vision, seeing the spirit soul. So this relative, friend, and family member, their spiritual sparks, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. So I care about them because of their spiritual relationship with the Supreme Lord. And next door, or down the block, or the other side of the world, there's some other people who are spiritual sparks, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Like this question came up in Vishakhapatnam. Sahu was asking, how can one go beyond I and mine? Because there's a natural affinity for my family, and because our topic was community. So how can I go beyond the concern primarily for my family and stretching a little bit so I can take up concern for others, but there's a natural affinity for my family. And there's a natural affinity. It's based on bodily identification, but that's natural. So one's Krishna consciousness, this is the essence of what the difference between Grihamedi and Grihastha is the Grihastha is Krishna conscious. Their consciousness is centered on Krishna. And therefore, there's detachment from the bodily affinity, just like Queen Kunti prays to Krishna to withdraw her attachment for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis, the material attachment. I don't want to care about Arjuna and Bhima and Yudhisthira. Let them just be washed away by time. I don't care. She's not asking like that. Let the material attachment, the material affinity, meaning just pure spiritual attachment based on centeredness on the Supreme Lord. That's Dhira. And when that situation exists, when there's some difficulty in the family, or some material calamity, or something happens, one's mind can remain undisturbed. And then when your mind is undisturbed, you can act with great clarity. Just like Narada. When he was cursed by Daksha, he easily, Prabhupada explains, he's so powerful, he could easily have counter-cursed or changed the whole thing, or he just accepted, his mind didn't change, same as Chitraketu, his mind didn't change. He was so powerful, he was a Mahabhagavata. Just see what he did in his life as Vritrasura. He was a Mahabhagavata as Vritrasura. They could have nullified completely what Parvati had said. He just accepted it and went on, with the mind that's unchanged, attached to the will of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, when one is so clear in consciousness, one can act very decisively, as opposed to being bewildered by the circumstance. What do I do now? And this is too much. And I can't can't take it, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's a rare quality. But that's what Prahlad is instructing. And he's indicating one of the primary stumbling blocks to achieve that consciousness is unrestricted sex indulgence in individual's life, or in a broader picture of things, in a civilization where sex involvement with the opposite sex is not, according to the principles of religion, restricted. It's a bewildered civilization. It's a maya sukhaya varam udvahato vimudhan civilization. Persons are, even they may be very intelligent, respectable persons. They're rendered vimudhan, they're rendered completely foolish by neglect of this principle. And when you, anyway, certainly from my position and perspective, I see it happen all the time. Persons who can maintain this, so the dira is one is, he's giving this example of two hands rubbing together. As in two genitals rubbing together. There's an itch, and to satisfy the itch, there's the rubbing to diminish the itch. We know for a fact there's an itch, you scratch it. It doesn't diminish the itch, it irritates the skin and it itches more. Similarly with sex indulgence is taken up. It doesn't relieve the itching, it inflames the itching. What's the consequence is I have to have more. So therefore, dira, one should tolerate that itching disturbance for a higher principle. But one can do that just in a religious way, saying dutifully I'm bound to follow that principle. But ultimately, one initially can do that just because it's a religious principle. Ultimately, one can completely become satisfied in that position when there's a higher taste. And that's the objective, is getting the higher taste of the happiness that is found in the association of the Lord's lotus feet. I want that happiness, not the itch-scratching sensation happiness. So after careful deliberation, fortified by the statements of Scripture and the spiritual master and every other religious angle, I remain undisturbed, even when there's cause for disturbance, and therefore detached from this worldly business of itch scratching, and dedicating myself instead to the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. That's the principle of grihastha life. In one category, and it applies in other categories. And that training, according to what Bhishma Dev said to Maharaj Yudhisthira, that training needs to happen now. Because, just like becoming an airplane pilot, you're not immediately put into the plane that's flying in the air. That's not your first lesson. You get some training on the ground. And then, even training on the ground, you have a co-pilot. You're sitting in the co-pilot's seat. He may let you take the controls for a little bit. While you're put hands on, you're watching him pushing all the buttons and maneuvering and then even when you're allowed to go ahead and fly, you got, you know, the trained person right next to you. In case it starts to go out of control, he switches the control back to his place that he's controlling, and you're watching. But in our modern society, there's no such training. And young men and women are put together, and usually it's disaster because there's no training. Prahlad is offering this training in principle, and such training should take place, and ideally it should take place from the teacher-student relationship. But if that, please hear this point, if that teacher-student relationship is not right, where the teacher says, here's a principle that you should live your life by, the student thinks, forget it. When I get in my married life situation, I'm not going to follow this principle. Is that why I'm getting married? So I can follow this principle? And then everything goes over the edge of the cliff into the jagged rocks below. While the person on the way down is criticizing the person who gave them the good advice. So therefore the dynamic of the teacher-student relationship is primary. Or to say it precedes these further instructions of how one should apply oneself to either attachment or detachment through continued life as brahmachari or going on into grihastha life. That's civilized society. That's cultured society. That's a spiritually progressive society. So he has these two terms, brahmana and kripana, right in the verse. And brahmana is where one has a valuable thing, this human form of life, and uses it properly. And kripana is one has a valuable thing, one doesn't know how to use it, and gets separated from it, as they say, that the fool and his money are soon parted. You've heard that one before? It's true. The fool and his money, they're soon parted. In other words, the foolish person is very easily tricked out of his money and very quickly it's gone. So, but then a kripana just puts it in a safety deposit box. Doesn't use it for anything, just sits there and rots. So somebody figures out how to get inside the safety deposit box, or after he dies, one of the relatives gets inside the safety deposit box and squanders it. So the position of brahmana, or the position of a devotee of the Lord, is to take this very valuable gift and receive training how to use it. Just as Prahlad is petitioning Lord Nisringadeva, please give me that training how to further engage. He's just a young boy. How to further engage myself in devotional service. This is part of that training. Anyway, we're just taking one verse and amplifying the message of this one verse, but very important. Very important principle in order to progress instead of regress. Any questions or comments?
Well, when I've been discussing the 13th chapter, Vidura's advising
Dhritarashtra
to become a dhira. That kind of dhira is not on the same level as what we are discussing here. He's also undisturbed, but he's not having the same realization.
Yeah, as you recall, there's three stages that are identified on the spiritual path. Dhira is just the preliminary. But here, this is that, there's an itching. You don't scratch it.
And in terms of one's attitude towards Kanchana versus Sattva, how does the preliminary
Well, how do you give a context? Because
Prabhupada says that in the 13th chapter, here is part of the frustrated realization that this material world is not worth it.
Yeah.
So in that situation, he's now obviously seeing how everything is related to Krishna.
Right.
He's seeing more uselessness of material existence.
Right. But are you asking in terms of Dhritarashtra at his old age, or youth in terms of young men, in terms of their immediate family members and family that will come in the future? And which way do you mean?
The reason I'm making this point is some of us may have a confusion in our mind. What is the dhira of Dhritarashtra and how does it relate to us? What kind of dhira are we supposed to become?
Well, I'm still not sure what you're getting at, but at least, minimally, a frustrated dhira. That is, being alert enough, having your light on enough to recognize This, the pursuit of material enjoyment, is a false promise. It actually leads to many unwanted miseries, which I certainly don't want. I like the enticement part, that's okay, but the misery part, that's not so okay. And therefore, it's a false promise. So, therefore, let me tolerate the urge to go for the material enjoyment business, because it's a waste of time. At least that much. Big waste of time. Bharam udvahatovi mudhan. Big time, waste of time. Now, the higher stage of detachment, there are two higher stages of detachment, but where there's higher spiritual taste. But I must at least be on the preliminary platform to even approach the higher spiritual taste. In other words, sense indulgence isn't going to give me higher spiritual taste. You don't mix those two together. Is that? The Narottam stage, or the Paramahamsa stage, that's Prahlad. And the sannyas, or the just detaching oneself for a higher cause, that's another position. But at least holding check on sense indulgence, because it's futile. Anything else? The teacher, the class, this, we're looking at the, I was speaking about the classic sense, Prabhupada describes it over and over again, because it's so important, of the classic sense of Gurukul, which is, that's a form, but the form applies certain principles that can apply elsewhere. So in that Gurukul situation, the teacher accepts certain young boys who stay in his ashram. His wife is there, and they're in training how to in how to control their senses in a number of ways. One of them is it's kind of a combination, rendering menial services like securing wood for the sacrificial fire. It's a menial service. One can hire a servant to get the wood. But the boy in the school, he goes to get the wood. He takes that menial service position. It also establishes that dynamic. There's sense control and submission and obedience. It's two things at once. Or going, in the classic sense, the young boy extending his cloth, going to the homes of different families and accepting alms on behalf of his teacher. And the householder, Mataji, sees the young boy at her door, and so she gives him a handful of grains or some fruits or vegetables, and he comes back and he gives that to his teacher. And he understood the lesson that Prabhupada emphasizes over and over is once he secures that, it's done on behalf of the spiritual, of his teacher. And so the teacher, it now is the property of the teacher. Never was it his property. It was the householder's property. Now it's his teacher's property. And he's in the servant position. So that if the teacher forgets or neglects to call the student for his meal, he'll fast. He'll not think, hey, wait a minute. I worked really hard to get all that grain and vegetable, and you didn't even call me for lunch. What kind of teacher are you? There's no attitude like that, because it's the menial servant. So the dynamic of being in the servant position, receiving the mercy of the teacher, however the teacher decides to dispense that mercy, and controlling the senses instead of frivolously going out and playing or whatever other things he may want to do, he's doing these specific services. And this is very simply sense control. Training in sense control as a principle. Not for the sake of putting the child through some artificial austerities, but in principle, teaching simplicity, teaching sense control. Because those are principles that the child will need to manifest in adult life. Sense control. And seeing that the work that I do, it's actually not mine. The fruit of that is Krishna's. And I should offer it to Krishna. My teacher may not be there, most likely. He'll be somewhere else, and I'll be somewhere else. And so they're not going to be right there that I can take everything to and say, this is yours. And when Mataji does some cooking, then we'll take our meal, if you call us. But it's, you know, one has more freedom and more responsibility, but the same principle needs to apply. This goes to Krishna. It goes into Krishna's kitchen and is cooked for offerings for Krishna. We offer it to Krishna, and we take the prasadam of Krishna. And that's how I lead my life, because I got that training. So, there's more details, but that's the dynamic. So that when the, just going back to this particular thing, it's not the only application, but when the teacher says, my dear student, when you enter into grihastha life, this principle of regulating one's sex activity needs to be followed by you, is accepted. Because of that dynamic, the student understands the teacher is only speaking, has always and ever only spoken things that are in my best interest, and they're based in scripture, and it'll take me on the path of freedom from material entanglement, and ultimately to the spiritual goal of life, and therefore accept, just because he said so. That's Dira. He's being trained. You may have this itching, but you tolerate the itching, and you put your attention, rather than fighting with the itching, put your attention in hearing and chanting, which will soothe the heart, purify the heart, and free you from this itching. Sense control. Just on sound vibration. Question? No? Okay. Yes. Okay. It's a little tricky. It's a little bit of a word game. But the idea is that the teacher, the Gurukul teacher or the teacher sees this student is a very detached individual. I'll give a personal example. Maybe some of you have met Govinda in Vrindavan, disciple Govinda. He's Hungarian and he plays with Indra, plays the Mridanga with the 24-hour kirtan party. So, I studied his character very carefully. And I tested him in various ways, and he knew that I was testing him in various ways. One of them was I asked him for his birth information, and he came back to me later and said, are you thinking of having me married? I said, I just want to see what your chart says. And it was very clear in his chart that very strong renunciation. But then he had, being in the situation he was in, little skirmishes here and there with, you know, some, because he's an attractive young unmarried man, some Matajis were making their play. So he needed to be protected. But it was, you know, so she needed some guidance. Should you go in this or that direction? It's very clear the direction he should go in. And he's doing very nicely. So, counteraction by detachment. It's not that he doesn't have an itch. anyone that has one of these material bodies. Prabhupada has explained. I mean, scripture has explained. Something is there. But he's very happy. Very happy. Very peaceful. His qualities are developing very, very nicely. He has important service. He likes his service. He's very set. He likes austerities. He lives very, very simply. And he's happy living very simply. He has that quality. So, counteraction by detachment. I offered him a gumsha when we were in Mayapur. He was serving me in Mayapur. I gave out gumshas and I said, would you like a gumsha? He said, I have two gumshas. No, I don't need it, really. Thank you. He wasn't thinking, I have a third gumsha. Great. Two is sufficient. So I can give it to one of the other devotees in the program. He's detached. Doesn't want to accumulate. Doesn't want to. He's in principle, he's keeping himself like that. Counteraction by detachment. And then, so that's, now the other is interaction. And with interaction, there is attachment. It's natural. One has a wife, one has money, one has a house, one has a, whatever the things are that one has in family life. There's some attachment that comes with those things. So, then there has to be some training how those activities where there's interaction and the consequent attachment that comes, I and mine attachment, how that can be purified by dedication of those things. So it's another art or another, I don't know the right word, principle, another application of principle to learn how those things that which we are attached to must be dedicated to serving Guru and Krishna. For a brahmachari, it's very simple. There's nothing else for the brahmachari. That's their life. Totally absorbed. There was one, there's one verse in the Bhagavatam we were reading in Mayapur where there's some statement that was being made that the brahmachari that leaves the association of his spiritual master becomes fallen. Because that's the right position for the brahmachari. He's in the care of the spiritual master. He's happy. He doesn't want something else. The one who wants something else, then they have to learn the art of interaction and becoming attached, but becoming purified. So the same principles that were taught, just that we discussed earlier, of sense control and respect in relationship with the teacher, that must be there in grihastha life in order to become purified instead of covered. So it's two, same principle applied in two different ways. Is that okay? Claude is pleading here that one should not become the grihanadi, that is involved in family life, losing the centeredness of God consciousness or Krishna consciousness. Then one is in the kripana position and everything good becomes lost and bad instead. Whole society, one's individual life, one's family relations, and going out in concentric circles, the whole society just becomes an unbearable thing. He's pleading, don't go that way. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.